I definitely understand, like, our fan base has been waiting, you know, for the franchise QB. And but I also don't want Jaden feeling any ghosts, making sure he understands there's only one name on the back of that jersey, and that's for him. And I don't want any comparison or any of the other stuff. I think it was the Teddy Roosevelt quote, comparison is the thief of joy.
I love that. Dan Quinn, comparison is the thief of joy. What ghosts was he talking about? There aren't many quarterback ghosts that you would compare him to, unless he had a certain quarterback from 2012 in mind. Here we are, a couple of days after one of the more memorable games in recent franchise history and one of the great quarterback games in franchise history. That is now well documented. What's also well documented is just how bad the defense has been in the first three games of the year. I'm going to give you some startling numbers. It's early, small sample size, but I'll give you something on the defense coming up. But I thought that was such an interesting quote from Dan Quinn, because, you know, there are lots of, you know, comparison, you know, sayings and quips and quotes and, you know, idioms and the whole thing. One of them is, you know, compare what you have with what you want and you'll always be unhappy. You know, it's kind of like, hey, just let's be happy with what we have. Look, I'm going to read you literally the first four or five of the first tweets after the show yesterday. Actually, it's probably four or five of the first 10 or 12 tweets. This from Matt, he's Mahomes. This from Dave, he's Josh Allen. This from Ed, he's Lamar with a Josh Allen arm. Isn't Josh Allen just Lamar with a better sense of pocket and passing? From Zachary, Kevin, right-handed Steve Young. From Kevin, is he a better runner than Vic? Look, sports fans in our conversations about teams and players and coaches are always going to side with comparisons are not the thief of joy. They're necessary to joy. But that is a good take from the coach about how he and Jaden need to move forward and how the team needs to move forward. But it won't stop the comparisons from coming, that's for sure. Good morning, everybody. Denton is with me per usual. Couple things on the show today. We will have on the show with us today Sean Springs at 11 a.m. You're going to hear Tommy and I talk on my podcast yesterday about C.J. Abrams as well. I want you to hear what Tommy thinks. Tommy's always kind of plugged into the baseball team here in town. You wouldn't believe how many times I run into somebody who has some affiliation with the Washington Nationals who will just say, how's Tommy doing? For whatever reason, they love him, and yet he is often very critical of the team. But you'll hear what he thinks about the C.J. Abrams situation, which we really have not discussed that much because, after all, it is football season. We've got some NFL buy and sell, five burning NFL questions. I've got, upon further review, I watched a lot of the offense. I did not waste any time, honestly, looking at the defense. I am so impressed with Daniels. I am so impressed with Cliff Kingsbury. I am so impressed with Eckler and McCaffrey and everybody right now. They are definitely operating ahead of schedule. And I think there's so much more to come. By the way, there was an update on Eckler yesterday from Dan Quinn. The update is he's back in Virginia, you know, being treated for the concussion and for a lacerated ear. I'm assuming he's not going to play Sunday in Arizona. Maybe that's a big leap already too early, but we'll see. They'll miss him. He has really played well in the first three games. This from Denny. Kevin, three games, that didn't take long. We finally have a quarterback. Then from Luther, can't believe I'm saying this, but the Washington Redskins got it right in the draft. Daniels is incredible. By the way, I'm not going to correct Luther on the name. Other shows in town can do that. Yeah, you know, I'm struggling here a little bit to keep my own level of excitement and optimistic feelings towards Jaden, you know, tempered a little bit because it's only three games. And some of the things that I've heard, you know, just in the last 2 days from national pundits, it's like, well, you know, three quarterbacks out of the six drafted have played, and it's very obvious that Washington got it right with Daniels and Chicago and Denver got it wrong with Caleb Williams and Bo Nix. It's way too early to come to any sort of conclusion on any of this. You know, like to think that Caleb Williams is like already being knocked down, like it was a bust pick and Chicago should have taken Daniels. Yeah, based on what we've seen in three games. I mean, I have a hard time, as much as I am, you know, a massive fan of them drafting Jaden Daniels and really believing that this would turn out well. But also, you know, being, you know, experienced enough to understand that the odds were probably stacked against anybody wanting Jaden Daniels to be drafted by Washington becoming right about it. It's a long way to go. We got a long way to go. You know, we haven't even heard yet the discussion about, well, you know, defensive coordinators will begin to adjust. You know, better defensive teams will adjust to Jaden and what, you know, Kingsbury's running. You know, I have heard a couple of people discuss, and we talked about this over the summer when I went back through kind of the Cliff Kingsbury career and identified, and I forget, somebody kind of clued us in on this, that his teams tend to run out of gas or run out of ideas or whatever it is as the season goes on, and teams tend to adjust. I'll tell you what, it certainly seems like they're doing a lot offensively, and at the same time, it may be one of those things that out of all of the stuff they're doing, it's kind of basic, as Cam Taylor-Britt had said about them. But, you know, basic or very complex, if you execute, you got a shot. And Washington certainly executed the other night and did on Sunday, the previous Sunday as well, against the Giants. There are better defenses to come. There are better defensive players to come. There are better defensive coaches to come. Keep in mind the best defense they faced. And yes, they had plenty of time to prepare, but not really knowing what they would see necessarily in week one. But Todd Bowles and the Buccaneers did a pretty good job, you know, in week one of slowing down what we've seen the last 2 weeks, and specifically on Monday night. But, you know, back to the comparison thing, I think there's a lot of the Josh Allen comp right now that's fair without kind of the bulk and the physical stature of an Allen. But I think he's much more dangerous as a playmaker with his legs. And he might actually throw a better deep ball, if that's possible, than Josh Allen. We'll continue to make comparisons, even if they are a thief of joy, as Teddy once said. So I wanted to talk real quickly about... I'm really excited after three games. I think they got it right. But I also know that there's a long road here ahead. You know, there will be some ups and downs. There's a game coming. I don't know when it is. When it's not going to click like it did the other night. When it's, you know, when they're not going to, you know, block it up quite as well as they did on the shot to Terry. Great job by McNichols in pass pro. Great job by Jaden to unload it before the free runner, the free pass rusher, got to him. They're going to be those days, and we've become, you know, most sports fans are this way. We're so reactionary, and you almost forget what your reaction was just a week prior. But the Cincinnati game was special. It was special. We talked about this on the show yesterday, but his PFF grade, for whatever you think that's worth, was the highest PFF grade for a quarterback this year. And then on top of that, he was the highest rated in a game PFF quarterback in Washington history as long as PFF has been around. I don't know. How long has PFF been around, Denton? 10 years? Something like that?
Yeah, 10 years, I think. 10, 11 years, something like that.
Yeah. On a scale of 0 to 100, and that's the PFF scale, Jaden had a 95.9 PFF grade. Incredible for a quarterback. You have to go back, and I think I said this yesterday morning, but if I didn't, you have to go back to, you know, as Galdi would call him, you know who. We know him as Kurt or Kirk Cousins. Kirk had had multiple QBR numbers. The PFF number is the highest ever. His 93 QBR number, the ESPN QBR number, was the highest for a Skins quarterback since Cousins, who had multiple 90s, had 94, 95 in 2015 and 2016. Which, you know, if you care about these sort of advanced looks into, you know, positional play, we just haven't had a quarterback that could do it at a true professional starter level since 2016, 2017. We have one now, it would appear. So here's the bad news. Offensively, Washington right now, DVOA-wise, in the Aaron Schatz, we've had Aaron on the show many times, DVOA metric, which, you know, as we've discussed many times, basically is an advanced number that, you know, factors in things like down, distance, score, opponent, etc. You know, when you look at just traditional numbers, you know, average yards per, you know, the traditional numbers, when you go to an ESPN or a CBS Sports .com or an NFL.com, and they've got the NFL stats there, and you go to team stats and you pull up offense and where are the offenses ranked, they're ranked by total yards per game. That's just so outdated, because we all know that total yards don't mean anything. It's when you gain those yards. Because if you end up with 200 yards in the fourth quarter of a game that you're getting blown out in, well, those are garbage yards. You know, and DVOA takes all of that out. It factors in, you know, time, context, score, etc., situation, so that a, you know, a third down and 10, a third down and 20, 15-yard throw that sets up a fourth down punt is less valuable than a third and 2, 3-yard throw. As football fans, we all understand the latter is much more important, even though the former generates more yardage. In that DVOA metric evaluation through 3 weeks, very early, we had Aaron on the show, and I said, at what point do you start to really look at your numbers, your DVOA numbers, and think that they're reflective of the kind of teams or the kind of positional groups that you have? And he said, it takes several weeks. Week one can be the most misleading of the season, which we know as NFL fans, certainly as bettors, you know that. Offensively, DVOA through 3 weeks, Washington has the number 9 offense in the NFL. Defensively, it's not only 32nd in the league, it's 32nd in the league by a lot. And he sends out to customers, and I'm one of them, sort of recaps of different things. And I got this from him yesterday on Washington's defense so far. He said there's one exception in terms of a team that has a very good offense but is very low ranked as a team, and he's got Washington right now as the 26th ranked team out of 32 in the NFL, and it's because of the defense. He writes, Remember how bad the Broncos defense was last year, historically bad? I kind of remember that. I remember our defense being the worst. He writes, the Commanders have been almost as bad when we adjust for the fact that scoring is down around the league this year. The Commanders are just 26th in total DVOA. That means they're the 26th, based on that, you know, evaluation, the 26th best team out of 32 in the league, despite, he writes, being 2-1. And a big reason is the horrible defense. Washington has a top 10 offense, but their defense is way, way behind everyone else. And then he gives a list of the worst defenses ever through the first three games of a season. And he said, remember, defense is worse. Yeah, well, you're not going to understand. Defense is worse when it's higher versus lower. So the worst defenses in the last 45 years of football. So you go back to 1979. Washington right now has one of the worst ever. In fact, it's the eighth worst start defensively in NFL history. And it's the only team ever to have this bad of a defense and have a winning record. The 2006 Houston Texans were the worst defense per the DVOA metric through three games. The Detroit Lions in 2008 were the second worst. Both of those teams were 0-3 at that point. The Chiefs in 2002 were the third worst through three games. They were 1-2. New Orleans was 0-3 in 79. That was the Aints, the New Orleans Saints, with the bags over their heads in the crowd, 0-3. Denver in 2023 was 0-3 last year. Cincinnati was 0-3 in 1985. St. Louis was 0-3 in 2008. And then Washington is next. The eighth worst defense through the first three games since 1979, but the only team with one of the worst defenses through the first three games to have a winning record. Everybody else was either winless. The Chiefs in 2002 had one win. By the way, the teams right behind them, the 2049ers, the 2013 Redskins, the 1990 Seahawks, and the 79 Bengals were all 0-3 as well. Now, if you're looking for a silver lining, he writes, most of these teams didn't actually finish out too badly. The 2008 Lions were winless at 0-16, but the 2002 Chiefs, 79 Saints, 2023 Broncos, and 85 Bengals all won at least seven games. To make the playoffs with a defense this bad, however, you really need to have a legendary quarterback. The only teams to start out with a defense worse than these defenses through three games and still make the playoffs were the 2021 Chiefs with Mahomes, the 2017 Patriots with Brady, and the 2013 Chargers with Phillip Rivers. Jaden Daniels looks pretty good so far, but I don't know if he's going to be that good. So there you go. He has basically written an entire thing on the fact that Washington is 2-1 with the eighth worst defense in the last 45 years to start an NFL season through three games. And he tells you that there are examples of overcoming horrible defense to make the playoffs, but you have to have Mahomes, Brady, or Rivers to do it. Is Jaden Daniels one of those three? As a rookie, that would be something else. Or maybe we can just hope that the defense improves after this wretched start, because it's bad, really bad. All right. When we come back, I wanted to go through a couple of things that I saw after watching the game on the All 22. Again, did not really watch any of the defense. I do think that there was a game-turning moment or a very important point in the game where defensive play was made. I mentioned that yesterday. I'll mention it again when we come back. But there are a couple of plays specifically that Jaden just was incredible. And then the Kingsbury scheme is really interesting when it comes to formations. So I'll get into some of that. You'll hear Tommy on the C.J. Abrams thing. We got a lot of NFL to talk today. Sean Springs is going to join us at 11. We'll get his thoughts on what he's seen so far. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
You talked a lot about the eyes and staying up and all that. Seemed to do more, have more emphasis on that last night. Did you see what you needed from there, and whether maybe some other areas where he progressed even in 3 weeks?
Yeah, and I think for him and for the team, that's what I expect us to do, to improve as we're going. But remaining a passer a little longer outside the pocket, there's added value to that. Now the person has to stay into coverage. And then if you do cross the line, you get your chances. But remaining a passer and going, taking your shot, when to, when not to, those are the things that jump out to me. I keep using the word poise. And I wish a lot of you on here are a lot smarter than me. You could find a better word than poise, but it's what I keep coming back to, because he's kind of always down for almost anything, John, like in the moment. And I wish you guys could be on the sideline. Sometimes the bigger the challenge for him, the bigger the smile. And he just has that way about him. And I've really felt that, you know, over the last couple weeks. And I felt it some in the preseason, you know, when we were going through, you know, getting ready. But it was a small sample size. But when you're in the end of the game, to have a go chance to win it, and you like are smiling because you know you're ready and you've been in that space, that's one of the things that that I love about him.
Dan Quinn yesterday talking about Jaden Daniels and doing something that they had talked about last week and even after week one, which is not scrambling just to scramble, but scramble with eyes downfield with the hope of making a play. And there's one play in particular that I wanted to mention where he did a great job of doing just that. The first drive of the second half, the one that starts with the Austin Eckler kickoff return of 62 yards, sets up Washington with their best field position yet of the year, because remember, their takeaways, there was one.
All right, we'll work to get Kevin back there. We obviously lost him. Nats lose to the Royals yesterday, 1-0 in 10 innings. The Nats had 5 hits, left 7 on base in the scoreless effort. DJ Hertz on the mound tonight for the Nationals at 9:45. In the NFL, Mike Tomlin has still not named Justin Fields as starting quarterback in Pittsburgh. Once Russell Wilson is healthy, Tomlin says that as long as Russell Wilson is not healthy, there's no need for him to make that decision. In college football, UNLV quarterback Matthew Slucka announced on Twitter today he's stepping away from the program and redshirting due to the program not fulfilling promises they made to him, which is believed to be NIL related. All right, we're going to get Kevin back here, but that's what's trending.
Sorry about that. I had a massive power outage in my studio. Although, Denton, when we've had that before, we've never been disconnected. Been very rare over the many years that we've gotten disconnected. But gave me more time to prepare for the segment. So you heard Dan Quinn, when we came back for the last segment, talk about, you know, sort of the progress, you know, that he's keeping his eyes up throughout the play. Actually, John Keim had asked him a question before that I thought was interesting. Keim said, subtle plays, coach, that stood out that maybe, you know, we as dum-dums wouldn't know. And he said there were a couple of checks, you know, that were really, really helpful. You know, checked out of a play against zero blitz and got him into a screen that was a better play overall. But anyway, so with respect to, you know, playing with eyes downfield, I think there's a play on drive number 4, and we didn't talk about this play yesterday, and these were some of the things I just wrote down as part of kind of going back and watching offensively Jaden Daniels in the offense on the All-22. But this one, you don't even really need necessarily the All-22. You just kind of find out whether or not there was anything else open on the play. But it is that first drive of the third quarter after the Austin Eckler kickoff return. And they've got a 2nd-and-7 at the Cincinnati 9-yard line. And Jaden extends out of the pocket, moving right. And there were a couple of things potentially there before he throws to Noah Brown right at the goal line. Remember, Brown almost got the ball with the ball almost breaking the plane, but they marked it inside the 1-yard line on that next play. And the next two plays later, by the way, is the Trent Scott touchdown catch. But Jaden does a really good job of rolling right, eyes never come off downfield. He actually looks in a couple of other directions, and there's a chance to throw to McCaffrey in rhythm, but once he goes off schedule, he finds Noah Brown, who did a nice job of coming back towards Jaden as Jaden was scrambling, and he makes a perfect throw. I loved that play because we really hadn't seen that kind of a play. Now, what makes it even better moving forward is red zone, quarterbacks extending plays is so big when it comes to touchdowns versus field goals, because you don't typically get what you want with whatever that play call is in the red zone in a very condensed situation. They're inside the 10-yard line. You need quarterbacks to extend. Either that or, there are a couple of things you need in the red zone to throw the ball in the end zone in rhythm in terms of, where the play is. You need great scheme. You need great picking. You need big-time size. And you need, playmakers with really good separation ability. Other than that, you can always run the football in. You can always gimmick your way in. But in terms of plays working in rhythm the way they're called, pass plays, you got to have great separation guys, great scheme, lots of picking that works, or big dudes. We've always talked about big receivers in the red zone, being able to throw the fade, being able to throw essentially a box out or a spot up. Absent of that, you need a quarterback that can extend and force defenders to cover for longer, and it creates more opportunities. And that's what happened on that play. I really thought that was an underrated play by Jaden, because there wasn't a lot of running room either. He could have taken off and maybe gotten a couple of yards, but he wasn't going to score from it, and that would have set up a third and goal from like the 7. Really good play there. Sort of upon further review, here were a couple of other things that I noticed. I think, other than the obvious great throws that he made in the game, the 55-yarder to Terry, which really was that is an illustration of this dude just can really throw a deep ball. That's a 2nd and 5. It's the second drive of the game. It's their third drive of the game, excuse me. It's the one that makes it 21-10, because the next play he keeps it on a zone read keeper and scores, sort of skips into the end zone. But on that 55-yard play on 2nd and 5, the deep shot to Terry, it's, the ball's in the air with Terry at the 42-yard line. I mean, it's 2nd and 5 at the 45, and he's not the 42, excuse me. That ball's in the air with Terry at the 32-yard line. Terry's 9-10 yards down the field tops, and the ball is in the air against bracketed coverage. Terry, and it's got to be thrown to the outside shoulder because the safety's coming over to make the play. If he leads him inside, Terry either gets blown up and it's incomplete, there's a potential pick, and he throws the ball perfectly. In many ways, that's almost a better throw than the touchdown pass, because the touchdown pass is 27 yards. This one's 55 yards downfield, 62 from where he threw it, and he unloads that thing with some pressure with Terry about 25 yards away from where, or 35 yards away from where he would make the catch at about the 8-yard line and carry it down to the 4. Has to throw it early, has to throw to the outside shoulder, has to throw it accurately, has to let it go early. Man, a lot of young quarterbacks have to see it. This dude, I think people were talking about he's got to see it. That's why he's scrambling. He's holding it in the first two games, maybe a little bit on some of the throws, perhaps, that were tighter window. But the deep shots, this is what he did exceptionally well in college. He threw great home run deep ball. Other than the two obvious throws, the 55-yarder to Terry, the 27-yarder, which really is an incredible throw for so many different reasons. You know, he knows it's zero coverage or a zero coverage look. He knows there's a free runner. He's going to get smacked, and he unloads that thing with Terry at the 19-yard line, and it's perfectly thrown. But my favorite throw of the game, other than the obvious ones, is drive number two. This is the drive in which they took over after the missed field goal. And they've got a second and 10 at the Cincinnati 35. This is the play after, if you recall, him missing Terry deep. He just let that thing go quickly, and it just got away from him. He's a great deep ball thrower. Terry was should have been thrown to even before the defender fell down. But he's got a second and 10. And he's just missed Terry on that deep ball. And, man, does he do a good job of going 1-2-3. It looks like it's cover three with four underneath, and McCaffrey does a great job spotting up right in a hole, you know, beyond the four in front of the corner on his side against zone. And Jaden just drills it in there for a gain of 11 yards. Move the sticks. Perfect throw. You see him go 1-2, boom, ball's out. McCaffrey's got it, and it's a first down on a second and 10. Next play, by the way, was the Eckler 24-yard touchdown run, which Allegretti and Cosme were outstanding on that play. And that was a huge, unbalanced look on that run with, it looked like, three offensive linemen unbalanced to the left. But my favorite of the non-obvious throws, the 27-yard touchdown, the 55-yard throw to Terry, was that one, the second and 10 against zone coverage. And he goes through his progressions. He looks big. He looks tall. He's surveying from the pocket. The processing's quick. The release is quick. The throw's accurate. And, you know, McCaffrey actually has a chance to turn it upfield. He got hit pretty quickly, but it's a very, very good throw. There's a lot of other things just that I found interesting. Let me just go through a couple of them. First of all, you know, sometimes when you go watch a game back, you know, you've got that scripted first 15. A lot of coaches do. I would assume that Kingsbury does as well. I mean, they were in shotgun, they were in pistol, they had, you know, on that first drive, they had two backs basically for the first half of that first drive with Eckler and with Brian Robinson Jr. in the game. You had different kinds of motion. You had Eckler lined up right at the line of scrimmage on one of them. You had outside motion. You had inside motion. I just liked watching what they did. There was a lot of complaints after week one. I mean, you got Terry on one side exclusively. There's no motion. They're showing a lot of different things. There's that I formation offset from the quarterback. They've run a couple of plays out of that. I've never seen that formation in the league. Maybe you guys have, but I'm talking about Eckler and Brian Robinson basically in an I formation next to Jaden, not behind him under center, like next to Jaden with Jaden in the shotgun. That's an interesting formation. They use Bates. They use Eckler. They use Sinnott in a weird formation where essentially it's like a fullback, but the fullback's not lined up in the backfield. He's lined up directly behind, you know, the guard and tackle or the guard and center. That's an odd look. You don't see a lot of that around the league when they, you know, they're using Bates at times and sometimes Sinnott, I believe, and even Eckler. I'm wondering, like, I think they believe both of their backs are also decent blocking backs because they've had each of them leading for the other on various runs. You know, they ran a wildcat fake reverse with Jaden split out as a wide receiver. Brian Robinson kept it. I actually think he missed a bigger run on that one. They ran Jaden on not necessarily a naked boot, but on a third and one under center. Where is that? I had that one, and I wanted to talk about that one a little bit. Yeah, so it's third and one. It's the drive to start the third quarter, and he fakes the counter from under center to Brian Robinson Jr. with a guard pulling, and then he boots it back around the other side. He did have kind of Wiley leading him, so it wasn't a true naked boot. But third and one, they used him under center in a bootleg keeper. There was not really a throw opportunity. He picks up 3 yards. They move the sticks. Now, he took a shot in the open field, didn't get out of bounds on that one. Wasn't really an opportunity to do that. Just a lot of different ways they are using Daniels. They are using the two backs also in particular. Love Terry at times lined up in the slot. You know, on that 55-yard throw, he's really lined up as a slot receiver. Bates is actually, is it Bates? It might be Sinnott. I think it's Bates, actually. And he comes in motion from outside of Terry. And then, you know, they wanted to see the coverage. And Terry essentially was manned up with safety help bracketed over the top. And it was a great throw. I just liked, I mean, of course. I mean, they scored 38 points on 6 drives. You're not going to find a lot of nits to pick. You know, I think the one play, you know, I'm sure that they've got a couple of them. But the 3rd and 2 on the opening drive before the 4th and 2 to McCaffrey, that's probably one that they're looking at and saying Noah Brown's wide open. Opening drive after they fall behind 7-0, and it's 3rd and 2 at the Cincinnati 31, and Jaden ends up taking a 1-yard sack. On that play, it's an empty set. They got a 4-receiver kind of bunch, kind of inside bunch to the left, and they've got a pick play for Terry. It doesn't really work. He turns that down, but he's got time as Noah Brown really spots up about 12, 13, 14 yards down the field. And, you know, is it possible from the end zone that there it may have been, you know, blocked a little bit by some inside pressure? Maybe, but I don't think so. I think he can make that throw. That would be the one, you know, of the ones I saw that they're probably saying, you got to let that go. That's got to be out quickly. And then on the next play, which was the 4th and 2 that they went for, and they get McCaffrey, you got a 3-by-1 again, and McCaffrey's in the slot. And the only thing about that play is that he kind of waits a little bit. I'm not sure McCaffrey was his first read on that one, but there is another receiver in the area, and their jersey numbers on all 22 are kind of difficult, but I think it's Noah Brown. But man, they were kind of close to each other for that kind of a play, but he put it right on McCaffrey, led him perfectly. McCaffrey did a nice job of running after the catch. Yeah, just a lot of things that were interesting in going back and watching. There's a play on the first drive of the third quarter also. They're an empty. It's 2nd and 8, and nobody's open. And he does this spin out, which, you know, he ends up gaining a few yards on the play scrambling. But I just wrote down, that's a sack 95% of the time in this league. It's like the play last week with McFadden. It wasn't quite as, you know, dead to right in terms of it should have been a sack, but it should have been a sack. It was very close to being a sack. And instead, he's able to get out and scramble for a few yards on that one. That was 2nd and 8 empty and scrambles for 2 or 3 yards. And by the way, there was a penalty on that play, too. There was a Cam Taylor-Britt got called for illegal use of hands. But still, it should have been him getting taken down 6, 7, 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and somehow he escaped. You know, that's where the conversation all during the offseason when we talked about the thing that a lot of the analytics guys were super focused on when they were really favoring Drake May and Caleb Williams over Jaden Daniels. They said his pressure to sack percentage is just too high. Now, it was the lowest of his career in 2023, but they're like, it's still too high. It's still too high as an average. And yet, the yards lost on sacks were the lowest of any of the quarterbacks by far. And what's interesting about why some of that happened last year, you start with this. He couldn't afford to punt because his defense was so bad. And he definitely, on longer yardage plays, waited as long as he could, tried to move around, tried to scramble, tried to extend to let somebody come open so that he could make a play down the field. Call it whatever you want, you know, trying to play hero ball or whatever the descriptions were during the offseason, but he knew they couldn't come off the field with a punter coming on. And there were so many of those plays where he avoided 7, 8, 9, 10-yard losses and turned them into either big plays or a 1 to 2-yard, 3-yard loss on a sack. You know, that's a big difference. Sacks and penalties are drive killers. Sacks are number one, though, because you lose the down on a sack. With a penalty, you don't lose the down. Sacks are bigger drive killers than penalties, especially when the sacks are normal lost yardage on a sack, 6, 7, 8 yards. And now you go from first and 10 to second and 18, that's a drive killer. You know, a holding penalty on first down, it's first and 20. You got a better shot at overcoming first and 20 than you do second and 18. He just didn't take those kinds of sacks. You know, the quarterback that did last year was J.J. McCarthy. He took big sacks. And again, you never really felt in watching him last year, and I don't think you really feel that this year, that when he is pressured and he does have to escape, it's because he didn't see it. You know, there aren't a lot of examples. There are a few in each of the games of him having an opportunity to cut it loose from the pocket versus, you know, taking off and trying to extend and trying to create. But more times than not, there isn't a lot available to him. But that one on that first drive was like, I just wrote down 95% of quarterbacks in the league get sacked there, and it's -7, -8, -9. He turns it into a 2-yard, 3-yard gain. And they got a penalty on that one anyway, defensively, which moved the sticks regardless. There's a lot to like. I think number one is still, right now through three games, his incredible mobility and playmaking talent. That is still, right now, as a young quarterback, three games into it, the thing that we've seen more than anything else. Scrambling. I still think, by the way, one other thing I wrote down, I still think he could have kept it. If those were true read option runs by Brian Robinson Jr., I thought there were opportunities for him to keep it. I'm wondering if there were, or if they actually weren't option plays. I would think most of those are option plays. It's still number one with him as a young quarterback. The playmaking, the avoiding bad plays with his playmaking ability and turning them into positive plays. And then the plays that, you know, aren't necessarily going to end badly, but he uses his mobility to create a big play. Number two, I think, is the quick release and the accuracy with the arm. I think we've seen that through three games. It's a very tight, compact, quick release throw. You know, there's no windup here. You know, there's no slow process in getting rid of the ball. Processing, I think we've seen it a number of times where you don't have a concern with him being able to read defenses and process going 1, 2 to 3. The deep ball is exceptional. Of course, he missed it in the opener, and he missed the first shot to Terry on Monday night. But you saw what kind of deep arm capability he has, probably more on the 55-yard throw than on the 27-yard touchdown throw, even though that one came with, you know, absolutely having to have it. Yeah, I think that was, I'm just looking through, that was a lot of it. The formations that I've seen with this particular offense that just appear to be new or slightly unique, that I formation in the backfield next to Jaden in the shotgun is an interesting one. I've never seen that. Denton, have you? And you and I are really, when I'm talking about this stuff, I'm talking about it from a college standpoint too. But that Brian Robinson Jr., Austin Eckler, you know, stacked in an I formation next to him, they've used an inside handoff to Robinson Jr. They've used Eckler going in motion or swinging out for a quick throw after Robinson Jr. looks like he's going to get an inside handoff. I've never seen that formation.
I mean, you might be able to see it if you like go way back into like certain archives. I don't know that he ever ran at LSU. I think you'd probably have to go back to like.
Talking about Kingsbury.
Yeah, I mean, Cliff probably got that from like a random game in like 1982. You know, he's kind of a student of the game in college football. So I'm sure like if you go deep enough in the archives, you've seen that. But I think it's a benefit because no one in the last 20 years uses formations like that consistently.
Yeah. You know, he's not splitting the atom. You know, I'm not suggesting that. By the way, that happened all the way back in like 1934 or 1935 in Germany, but that's a different story altogether. But I think that there is what we heard all along and what college football fans and college football people have known for years. Cliff is creative. Cliff has an imagination. And I think we've just seen the tip of the iceberg here. He's got a young quarterback. He is definitely leveraging the best parts of Jaden in terms of the skill set. But, you know, it's three games. I'm excited. Don't get me wrong. I'm really excited. And everything that you saw last year, you're seeing at the pro level. But, you know, there will be an adjustment made by, you know, defensive teams and defensive coaches. I thought one of the things, one other quick thing, I thought one of the things Cincinnati did early is they made it really more of an effort to take Brian Robinson Jr. out of the game on the zone read stuff or on just the called runs. And they were okay. I'm not saying that they were okay with it, but I think they really wanted to see Jaden run more. And maybe the plan was, you know, we'll take our shots at him in the open field. But I thought they did a good job of really keying Brian Robinson Jr. And look, number eight was 16 for 33, 2.1 yards per carry in that game. So they did a good job on him. The defensive play, went back and looked at it again, and it's a key play in the game. In a game in which neither team's going to be stopped much, you know, almost like Big 12 football, all you're looking for is something to derail a drive, something that'll lead to a missed field goal or an unexpected punt. And that last play of the first quarter by Sanristil and Chase Brown was really the biggest, you know, defensive play of the game. It's second and 11, and it created a third and 11. He sniffed that out, and that's what he did at Michigan. He's a very instinctual guy, and he took a shot there, and he was right, and he blew up the quick bubble to Chase Brown, and ended up, you know, creating a third and 11 for them. And then Chin makes a good play on the third and 11, but they haven't, you know, forced since, you know, the first game enough third and longs. First game they did a pretty good job on first down, even second down at times. Third down, not very good at all, even third and longs. All right, Sean Springs will join us next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.